Hey guys, it's Felicia. I am still somewhere in the world, vacationing, luxuriating, you know, just living my best life right now, trying to get my life together, y'all. And while I take this much needed respite, I have something fabulous for you. You don't want to miss this. Attorney Anitra is back with legal therapy. Attorney Anitra,
take it away.
Welcome back. I'm Attorney Anitra, and this is Legal Therapy. We are talking about how to clarify you before you qualify them. Them being a job, relationship, anything in life. And I'm being pretty bold, but what I'm basically promising you is that if you go through this process, by the time you and I work together, if you ever have to get to that place, you already have the groundwork, the foundation set up so we can hit the ground running. And we can go ahead and get that bag and settle this case so you can move on with your life and in a journey that serves you and your purpose. You know, I became a civil rights attorney during the time Black Lives Matter as a movement was being birthed.
And a reading of the names. Rekia Boyd, say her name.
Unarmed Black teen Trayvon Martin in 2012. The case set off a national debate on race and self-defense gun laws.
Trayvon Martin was brutally gunned down and murdered while I was in law school. After that, as I'm becoming licensed, Tamir Rice is murdered by the police. Mike Brown is murdered by the police. This informed my lens. So not only was I in the process of studying employment discrimination and starting my own civil rights law practice, all of these events were unfolding right before my eyes. So when I have a potential client come to me now and say that they are here for the fight, they are here for the culture, they want to pursue a claim against their employer for the principle of just justice. You know what I say to that? I stand up, I lift my hands, and I say, stop lying. Oof. Uh-oh. Yeah, I know that's harsh, but it's real. Because the truth of the matter is that I've come to find out that that person is enemy-centered. And I've made a decision that moving forward, I will only work with clients who are legacy-centered. And that's what we're going to talk about today. In this 7-part series, we are talking about the acronym CLARIFY, C-L-A-R-I-F-Y. In our first session, we talked about context, what your story is, what are your triggers, and how can we get you to stop reliving that experience and become empowered by it. In this session, we're centering on legacy. So let's unpack that. I remember the first time I encountered employment discrimination personally. It was before I went to law school. And I was shocked. I couldn't believe it was actually happening to me. I didn't even know what to call it. And if we're honest with ourselves, we are so deeply offended when somebody steps out of line and they target us that way. And of course you would feel offended. And I think if you're honest with yourself, a lot of the times, especially if it's the first time it's happened, it becomes an unforgivable offense. And that unforgivable offense sometimes, in some people, starts to be disguised by this language of doing it for the culture and trying to make a change in America in general. And I don't doubt that there is a level in each of us that wants to see systemic change. But if we keep it real, when you took the job, you were not worried about the culture. When you got that paycheck and you spent said paycheck, you were not worried about the culture. So I'm not sitting here trying to judge you and call you out for not being woke enough. What I'm saying is, actually, I want what's real with you. I want the actual driving factor with you. And if your driving factor is going to be centered on your enemy and on revenge, I just can't work with that. Stephen Covey says this in his book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. He says, when someone feels he has been unjustly dealt with by an emotionally or socially significant person, it is very easy for him to become preoccupied with the injustice and make the other person the center of his life. I remember reading this when I was going through that discrimination issue the first time, and it convicted me immediately. I had made that person who was wronging me the center of my life. All I could do was talk about this person. All I could do was just be pissed off and complain and talk crap about this person and point out everything that this person did was wrong to me. And I wasn't wrong, but I was also taking up a lot of my life energy on this person who honestly was not worth my time. To get clear on you, to the point where you can dig yourself out of any offense quickly. I'm not saying that it's not going to be an effort, but you don't have to stay and obsess over someone. If you want to get to that place and thus set yourself up to be able to maneuver the difficulties of life with tenacity but effectiveness, I want you to focus on legacy. Legacy. What is legacy? Legacy is when a person passes something down to someone else. It could be a thing, it could be a message, it could be an idea, a set of values. It could be somebody you're related to, or it could just be what you're known for after you are here if you don't have that lineage set up. And this L in clarify could stand for life, what you want your life to be dedicated to. It could stand for love. Who do you love? What do you love? And how do you want that love to be remembered after you're gone from this planet? It could stand for leverage. What did you equip people with so they can have leverage after you're gone? But I think the best way to sum up all of those ideas is this word, legacy. What do you want to be known for? And I'm passionate about this idea because I remember a time I almost completely negated, snuffed out, stopped my own legacy. If you haven't listened to session 1, which is all about context, the seat, and clarify, definitely go back and listen to it. Because in that session, I talk about some of my triggers and when the first time I felt certain emotions and certain triggers. And my home life was pretty unstable after the divorce of my parents. But one thing that I knew, stepping into the chaotic situation and becoming a nurturer, especially of my younger 2 siblings, I knew I was called to be a mother one day. I knew that if I loved my little sister and brother, and even as a 12-year-old, taking care of them and cooking for them and getting them ready for school and helping them with their homework, I loved that. And I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, how much more would I love my own children? So I always knew I was called to be a mother. Even in law school, when we had no time for anything really, I still poured into children because I was that sure that I was going to be a mother one day. So yeah, I would babysit people's kids. Yeah, I would volunteer to work in a nursery or church or something because I didn't want to lose touch with a part of my life that I knew was going to come into fruition. So when I didn't have children from my first marriage, I was devastated. I was heartbroken. But I did the work. I talked about the work. I talked about how I came up with this clarify process during my divorce. During that process, I stopped dating. I gave it a little whirl at first and I was like, okay, I need to concentrate on myself before I repeat these same mistakes. And that's what I want to prevent for you. I don't want you to keep making the same mistakes. And so that work, this clarify you process, is pivotal. And I shared my happy ending, but I didn't share before my happy ending. Before I met the man I'm married to now, I really hit rock bottom. After meeting somebody and actually feeling like, okay, maybe this is the guy. I had spent some years working on myself. And when we met, he was a caliber of guy that really reflected, in my opinion, the work that I had been doing on myself. He was mature. He was a father already. He was responsible. He was also divorced. And I felt really proud that I had waited and I had invested in myself and now I was reaping the benefit. But then something happened. This person who we were making plans for our future together, which included adding children to the bunch, he revealed that he didn't ultimately want children. He tried to wrap his mind around it, but just ultimately just didn't want to do it. And I appreciated his honesty. Like, that was a reflection of the kind of man that I was attracting to my life because of my work. But then I also told him that I couldn't move forward with the relationship. Why? Because I had become clear on my legacy. I was called to be a mother one day. That was a really hard time in my life. It wasn't too long ago. The pandemic was just starting. I was heartbroken. I was isolated. I wondered if I had wasted the best years of my life. And I started to let hopelessness set in, to the point where I stopped seeing the point of being alive. I didn't plan my death. I didn't have steps or things that I wanted to do to end my life. But I began to wonder why I was here, why my creator would have me in this situation. And that, my friends, is what we actually call passive suicidal ideation. And a lot of us go through that. A lot of us go through situations that are so hard that we start to lose any type of motivation to be alive. And that can slide into active suicidal ideation where you start making plans to leave here. Fortunately, something happened. I was crying as I was journaling, as I started reaching out to people who I knew loved me and supported me, and a professional mental health therapist. I remembered my legacy that I wanted. I remembered what I wanted to leave behind me. I knew I was called to be a mother. And since I hadn't had children yet, a reason that I wasn't done here yet. And then I met my current husband. When we had an early conversation about children, he already had two, but he said he was a tribe kind of guy. And that was something that he could sign up for. Legacy. When we come back, I want to talk about some steps that you can use to clarify your legacy. What do you want to be known for? What is something you know you want to do? That's being legacy-centered instead of enemy-centered. I want to show you how to do that because it could come down to a life or death situation for you to know this information about you. Welcome back. I just shared with you really rock bottom moments of my life where I didn't even want to be here. But then how that spark and that zest for life started to come back and prepped me to really be able to walk into my legacy. I really like to study people who seem to have gotten this really right. You don't have to agree with everything that they stand for. You don't have to believe in them for any kind of spiritual purposes. But I believe that there is plenty of credibility for certain people in history. One of those people is Steve Jobs. You don't have to like Apple products. I'm kind of obsessed with them, but that's just me. But Steve Jobs' whole thing was that he wanted a computer for the rest of us. And so he struggled with Apple creating the Apple computer, getting kicked out of the company, eventually coming back. But I read an article that it was an interview that he did in 2007 talking about the iPhone. He had just lowered the price from $5.99 to $3.99. And the interviewer was asking him, like, what are you going to do about your customers who are going to be upset about the price drop? He was just like, that's just technology. You know, Steve Jobs was a bit, he could be a hard guy. But his vision in that moment was to have 10 million units of the iPhone out in the world. And this was the iPhone's debut. So by the time 2007 ends, there's actually only about 2 million units sold. But his whole thing was, he didn't care that it was very similar to the iPod Touch. He said, if anybody's going to cannibalize us, it's going to be us. We are our own competitors. But he knew he wanted to get a computer into everybody's hands. The next year, 2008, the iPhone had 11 million units out in the world. And so I extract this framework of people who seem to have been really clear on the legacy that they wanted to leave and how it was accomplished. Number one, they seem very clear on their message. Steve Jobs wanted a computer for the rest of us. He wanted something in everybody's hands. And he was clear on what he wanted to leave behind. He wanted to change the way computers were accessed. And three, he focused on his sphere of influence. If you study network theory, which I do, you realize that number one, the person who's the innovator behind something big is usually not accepted where they are, you know, originally from. So they connect themselves with a group of people who are going to be very influential in spreading their message. It's not going to be a ton of people, but you have a tribe who believes in what you do. And you invest in that tribe. You leave the legacy with that tribe. And that tribe is the one who carries the message out. This is the same pattern that we see with Jesus in the New Testament of the Holy Bible. Don't have to believe in it, but I think we would be hard-pressed in this country to find people who have not heard of Jesus. And it follows the same pattern. He was really clear on his message. He came here to save the world. He was sent from his Father here. Follows the same pattern as an innovator, going to be rejected in his hometown, right? But then he was clear on what he wanted to leave behind. He wanted to leave behind this very particular spiritual approach, this kingdom message, this gospel. And then he focused on his sphere of influence, disciples. He spoke, he healed people, but he had this tribe of people who were really responsible for spreading the message and spreading his values. And what's so interesting is that looking at the map of how Jesus traveled and spread this message and worked with his disciples over a 3-year period, it was really like the distance between LA and San Diego. So it wasn't a very large distance, but look at how many people know about the Bible, about Jesus, about that story, about that message. And I can go on and on. Elon Musk, he's still here, but, you know, putting people on the moon and populating planets, you know, that's his thing. So what I want you to take away from this is to be clear on your message, number one. Number two, think about what you want to be known for. You have your message, but how are people viewing you? And three, what's your sphere of influence? Who are the people who really matter? Because if you do this work, you won't be so focused on your enemy that you can derail your whole life because you're trying to get revenge on them. We don't have time for that. I don't have time for that. You don't have time for that. I almost lost all hope in life. And life is funny that way, that you can want something so badly that that same energy, when you don't get it, you just start to feel like you're dying inside, and it's not a very far leap to think about dying altogether. And I've seen the depression. I've seen the trauma in my clients. And I've seen the anger and the revenge even get turned on me. One moment you're talking about you're doing this for the culture. The next moment you're coming after a young Black civil rights attorney who was doing everything she could to help you. There's a disconnect there. And you may have lost touch with that thing, with that message, with that idea, that value system that you want to leave behind you. Or maybe you haven't even thought about what you wanted to leave behind you. But don't lose touch with that. Connect with that. Take this time to clarify you by asking yourself, what do I want my legacy to be? What do I want to be known for? That's a person that I can influence. You could be part of my tribe of influence. We can change the world one day by just clarifying who we are today. When I think about the message that I want to leave, I want to leave this message of clarify you before you qualify them, of focus on the individual so that clarity allows you to make wise decisions about who to connect with in your life. You can put people in their proper category. Are you just there to help? Are you there to just temporarily influence? Or is this somebody that you're going to be walking a more intimate journey with? I think we just don't have the tools right now to really do the self-exploration that would best prepare us to connecting with other people in a meaningful way. And I want to be known for that kind of wisdom that I taught, that I was able to take really important issues in life and distill them into a way that people could really learn and use them. It's accessible, it's relatable. And my sphere of influence, my tribe, my family, and those who I'm called to serve in my career. You know, I struggled with the brokenness of my family, the tragedy that happened in my family before I even arrived that I talk about in session one. So a huge part of my legacy is putting my family back together, is moving forward with our tribe and giving us tools that make us stronger. Jay-Z has a song called Legacy. And it says, legacy, 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 legacy. Black excellency. And he mentions this idea that maybe the pain that his family went through, maybe it was worth it to make them stronger today and best poised to leave a legacy. And I believe in that. I believe in that for me, and I believe in that for you. I'll see you next time. AA Legal Therapy, clarify you before you qualify them. We're going to be talking about the A in clarify, which is asset, what you bring to the table. I'll see you then.